Okay, we'll take that case under advisement. We're a little more than halfway through the call of cases this morning, so I'll repeat what I said earlier because some new people are in the courtroom. Judge Williams, the third member of our panel, is participating by speakerphone. She is in Detroit where her mother is ill, and she will be full participant as the third member of the panel deciding the cases that are argued today. And we'll move now to case number 6 for the day, United States versus Lincoln Alexander. Mr. Strong.
If please the court, my name is Attorney Lamont Strong, here on behalf of the appellant, Lincoln Alexander. We come before this court maintaining that the quantity of drugs that was attributed to Mr. Alexander is not underpinned by reliable evidence. In fact, we assert that the statement upon which the court based her information is an incredible statement as a matter of law. And I will explain to the court that what happened here is that Mr. Alexander and his co-defendant, Peggy Franco, were arrested in a controlled sale buy situation. Once they were arrested, the female, Peggy Alexander, was interviewed by FBI agent Kathleen Adams, and Mr. Lincoln Alexander was interviewed by a state police agent. Their interview was reduced to a police investigative report. Now, when the first attorney that represented Mr. Alexander conferred with Mr. Alexander, they decided to plead guilty, and what was left was a sentencing hearing. And from that plea of guilty, there was the right that Mr. Alexander reserved to himself to question the amount of drugs that were attributed to him. We looked at the agreement and at the record. In fact, I was there at the sentencing hearing, and a statement that was in the investigative report of FBI agent Kathleen Adams is really the operative statement, and we think that it's a positive statement in this case. She attributed the statement to Peggy Franco, that a certain person named Campbell had been supplying cocaine to herself and Alexander since Alexander got out of jail in February of 1996. Now that statement, if the justices would look at the statement, what she is saying has to be saying, and I should point out, she did not testify at the sentencing hearing. But that statement was used by the probation officer and by the court to add 52 kilograms of cocaine under the rubric relevant conduct to Mr. Alexander. Now the reason the statement is incredible as a matter of law is because in February of 1996, Mr. Alexander was incarcerated as verified in the pre-sentence report. Therefore, Mr. Campbell could not have been supplying drugs to her and Alexander since February of 1996. And I would point out to the court that the word since is really a very key word, because since means from now, which is February of 1996, until sometime in the future. It does not mean sometime in the future going back the other way. What happened when the probation officer investigated this matter, what he did, he admitted that he took his statement from the investigative report of the FBI agent, Kathleen Adams. However, he did not take the statement in its entirety. What he did was he altered the statement, or he adjusted the statement to fit with the theory of the prosecution or the government. He said that since Alexander did get out of the penitentiary in August of 1996, that he would only use the date from August going forward. We contend that he cannot arbitrarily take a statement that was made by a non-testifying witness and recast that statement in any fashion that he chose. Yes.
And whether
or not they corroborate Franco as the government suggests? It does not corroborate Alexander to any extent, in that the government contends that Alexander stated that he went to Texas to buy drugs from Mr. Campbell. In fact, if the statement is examined closely, what Mr. Alexander said was that he carried $14,000 to Texas for Mr. Alexander. Whether or not he was doing him a favor, whether or not he was doing something else, we don't know. But we do know that the person he gave the statement to, who could have told us what he might have meant, Agent Benny O'Neill, was also not called by the government. It was introduced in the court through Kathleen Adams, so that that statement too, at the very least, is ambiguous. It does not say to any extent that Mr. Alexander went to Texas to purchase drugs. It simply says he carried $14,000 to Texas for Mr. Campbell. No, ma'am. Well, I think that it's a fair inference that he knew Mr. Campbell. I mean, the mere fact that he went there, but I don't think, Justice Williams, that I have ever seen the word, not only in the statement, but in the record, except in the record and the brief of the government, that the word associate was used. Mr. Alexander, after he left Mr. Campbell in Texas, went to visit a girlfriend and came back to Chicago on his own without any drugs. So that what I'm really saying to the court, what we have here is a statement that was taken from a non-testifying witness that constitutes 94.7% of the amount of drugs that were attributed to Mr. Alexander. This court observed in a case, United States versus Robinson, that was reversed by the United States Supreme Court on other grounds, that when the government expects that the testimony would come from a witness who's going to testify to the amount of drugs in that category, the court cautioned the government that it would be a good idea to call that person as a witness. Now, we contend that it also approaches, or it's a violation of due process, because if the proposition that we contend that the statement is incredible as a matter of law, then that statement cannot be corroborated. The statement on its face, since 1996, there's no one that can corroborate that, because that statement just does not exist. It's a statement that would have been physically impossible for the witness to observe what she claimed or what she described, or it was impossible under the laws of nature for those events to have occurred. We think we have amply demonstrated that in our brief, and a second statement that had the same effect. I would urge this honorable body to look at that in the same sense, and that is simply that the same person who did not testify said that she picked up drugs and the drugs that they were caught with on the corners of Prairie Avenue and Ashland Street in Chicago, Illinois. That, too, is an incredible statement as a matter of law, and this court took judicial notice of the fact that the streets run parallel to one another. They do not interdict. And I would urge this court to reverse the sentences, at least with respect to the 15 kilograms, because that's not supported by reliable evidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Strong. Ms. McInerney?
May it please the court, I'm Patricia McInerney, and I'm here representing the government. Before we get into my argument, I want to address a part of the reply brief that Mr. Strong filed in this case, wherein he pointed out in his argument where I had, and I believe on page 10 of my brief, had incorrectly attributed a statement to Mr. Alexander. I went back and read that section, and indeed, the statement that I attributed to Mr. Alexander when I wrote it was a compilation of what I had recalled the statements to be, that Ms. Franco had, that Alexander had stated that his associate, had traveled down to Texas to bring back between 20 and 40 kilograms of cocaine. And the actual quantity that was attributed to what Mr. Alexander got from that associate was given by Ms. Franco, that being 2 to 3 kilograms every 2 weeks. I want to apologize to the court because it is, on the face it seems to be a misstatement, at the very least. It's misleading, and I want you to know that I'm glad that Mr. Strong brought it to my attention and to your attention so that we can correct this at the record right now during this argument. But I did want to bring that to your attention and apologize to the court. I truly do know my duty, to try and be very precise in a brief, and I embrace that.
Does that error change your position?
No, that error does not, and let me assure you that it is not in the argument section of the brief. That error is not repeated. It is very clear as to what quantity.
Go on with the argument. You made your apology. Go on with the argument.
Okay, thank you. All right. It is not the government's position here that that Mr. Alexander could in February be in jail and selling cocaine on the outside. That's an inconsistent statement. We don't contest that. We don't contest that an intersection of Prairie and Ashland would probably be an inconsistent statement, although that's not quite what she said. I think that in Franco's statement she said Prairie near Ashland. I don't think the statement says at the corner. What our position is basically is that neither one of those factual errors makes any difference in this case. In the first part, the quantities of cocaine to which would have been attributed to Mr. Alexander between the period of time that Ms. Franco said of February to the date they were arrested was not counted. It was only counted from the period of time for which it was determined that he was out of jail. Furthermore, the Prairie and Ashland situation, that is what led up to the offense conduct, and Mr. Alexander pled guilty to that. So it has no significance to his sentence. The judge in her findings spent time to address the credibility of Ms. Franco's statement. This was not a sentencing hearing where only Ms. Franco's statement was submitted as part of the evidence for the court to rely on. There was the testimony of Mr. Clay, who was the individual who had bought cocaine from Mr. Alexander for 6 months prior to April of 1996, when Mr. Clay was arrested. He testified at the sentencing hearing. He corroborated much of what Ms. Franco said as far as seeing other quantities at Mr. Alexander's apartment, as far as hearing from Mr. Alexander himself as to how the cocaine would come back in hidden compartments in a car from Mexico. That was his understanding that he got from Mr. Alexander himself. Furthermore, the statement that Ms. Franco gave and Mr. Alexander gave at the same time, but to different agents, on October 13th of 1997, when they arrived in Springfield to distribute the over half a kilogram of cocaine to Mr. Clay, and that, except for the factual misstatement as to when Alexander got out of jail and the location where Ms. Franco went to get the cocaine, basically corroborate one another. They both identified the source as Mr. Campbell. They both identified the fact that Mr. Campbell would go down to Mexico to bring the drugs back. They both identified that he used hidden compartments to bring the cocaine back. They both identified the extreme quantities that Mr. Campbell would bring back. I think she said between 20 and 30 kilograms at a time, and Mr. Alexander said between 20 and 40 kilograms at a time. They both also identified that Mr. Campbell made these trips about every 2 weeks. The one thing that Ms. Franco did add was that Mr. Alexander got 2 to 3 kilograms of that cocaine that Mr. Campbell brought back. Mr. Alexander did not state that. He did agree that he went down on a trip with Mr. Campbell. This statement is part of your record, so it's in the appendix, and you can read it to review it yourself. But it's my recollection of Mr. Alexander's statement, contrary to what Mr. Strong has said, that Mr. Alexander admitted he had taken $14,000 with which to purchase cocaine down to Texas, was not successful, but he went with Mr. Campbell. And that he characterized Mr. Campbell as his associate. The court very much went into why she could rely on the statement of Ms. Franco. She said that that statement was corroborated much in part, most of it, by Mr. Alexander himself. Her duty under 1B1.3 was to find that the uncharged conduct was part of a common scheme or plan, or part of some continuous or some course of conduct that was continuous. Now, her findings, though they may not be ideal, really contained everything. She adopted the PSR, and if you look at paragraphs 7, 9, 10, 11, and part of 12 in the PSR, it basically sets forth those items that that prove that the uncharged conduct was related to the charged conduct, either as part of a common scheme or plan or as part of the same course of conduct. You had the common drug, cocaine. You had the common source, Mr. Campbell. Close in time, Mr. Clay had purchased from Mr. Alexander over the 6 months prior to his arrest in April of 97. You had the same destination, came back to Chicago, the same point of origin for the cocaine, down in Mexico. You had the same customer from the charged offense as the uncharged offense for at least up to 3 kilograms of that. The other was attributed to exactly what Ms. Franco said as to the quantities that Mr. Alexander got from that period of time to the date of their arrest. So the judge attributed 3 kilograms from Mr. Clay, 52 kilograms from the statements made by Ms. Frankel, corroborated by Mr. Clay's testimony. And his testimony, by the way, included tape recording conversations between him and Mr. Alexander, which referred to many of their past dealings, referred to the cocaine coming, referred to he was waiting for a delivery. So there was some corroboration in the tape recorded conversations that the judge listened to. And also corroborated by much of what Mr. Alexander told agents at the same time. And then she, of course, the charge offense was a little over a half a key, 623 grams, I believe. And so that adds up to the 55.6 kilograms of cocaine to which the judge attributed to Mr. Alexander. We believe that her findings, though, as I said, not ideal, has everything there that's needed to make this finding. And we would ask the court to affirm Mr. Alexander's sentence.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Strong, your time had expired, but I'll give you another minute because of the correction that was noted in response to your reply brief.
Just one major point is that she indicated that Mr. Clay said that he had purchased drugs from Mr. Campbell in April of 96. That was part of our argument because at that time, Mr. Alexander was also incarcerated, and we contended he could not have purchased. But I would suggest to this honorable body that the court never found Ms. Franco credible. She never appeared. She didn't see her testify. The court said her statement must have been true because Ms. Adams testified to it, and therefore I would accept it. But she didn't find her credible to any extent. And the fact that the factual misstatement, it's not a factual misstatement. You have to take the statement. It came out of the mouth of Peggy Franco. No one was in a position to modify that statement. They must have taken it as it was written, and we suggest to this honorable court that any modification is the same or no less than an alteration and should be ignored. Either the statement was true or not true. You have to take it for what it is. We honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Strong. The case will be taken under advisement.